Good day, and welcome to the TGS Q1 2015 earnings results presentation conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Robert Hobbs. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Breen. Welcome to the TGS first quarter 2015 conference call. My name is Robert Hobbs, CEO of TGS. Joining me today on the call is Christian Johansson, our COO and interim CFO. Earlier today, we posted our first quarter earnings release and presentation of the results on our website. I hope that you've had an opportunity to view the release, and we'll now just give a brief summary of the main points before opening the call to questions. In the first quarter of 2015, TGS had total net revenues of $172 million, a decrease of 23% compared to $222 million in the same period 1 year ago. Late sales for the quarter totaled $72 million, down 48% from Q1 2014, and reflecting the significant decline in demand for seismic data that has been experienced during the first 3 months of 2015. Net pre-funding revenues were $94 million, up 26% from Q1 2014, funding 58% of the company's operational multi-client investments during the quarter. Our multi-client investment totaled $163 million, 26% higher than 1 year ago. Proprietary revenues of $6 million were lower than the $11 million 1 year ago. Our resulting operating profit was $37 million, 60% lower than Q1 2014, and represents 22% of net revenues. Our operating profit was, of course, impacted by lower late sales, but was particularly affected by the extraordinarily high amortization rate on our Naridi survey in Australia, where it's the intent to fully amortize the cost of that survey during acquisition and processing. Earnings per share were 22 cents per share compared to 66 cents per share in Q1 of 2014. On a positive note, we delivered cash flow from operations of $260 million, up 18% from $221 million in Q1 2014. This strong cash flow positions TGS uniquely within our industry, with a cash balance of $352 million at the end of the quarter, which is in addition to our unused $50 million revolving credit facility. As I've already mentioned, demand for seismic data has significantly deteriorated over the first 3 months of 2015, and the outlook for improvement in the market remains quite uncertain. TGS is in constant communication with its customers, and many of these energy companies have not finalized their spending plans for 2015. From these discussions and an assumption that the price of oil will remain under pressure, TGS has revised its guidance to reflect the negative market development as announced to the market on the 13th of April, 2015. TGS now expects annual net revenues of approximately $630 million for 2015, down from $750 million as originally communicated in January. Operating profit is expected to be negatively affected by the higher amortization, and management is carefully monitoring the book value of the multi-client library in light of current market conditions. Higher amortization will be partly compensated by the effects of a cost reduction program implemented in Q1, which includes a reduction of more than 10% of TGS's global workforce effective from April. Despite these near-term market challenges, TGS believes the long-term future of its business, and particularly the company's focused asset-light multi-client model, is strong. For 2015, the company has secured adequate land and marine crew capacity at very favorable arrangements. This has encouraged TGS to continue investments in prolific areas with proven returns. This countercyclical approach has historically proven successful, and TGS will continue to take advantage of the asset-light business model combined with a strong balance sheet. At this time, we'll open the call to your questions. Breed, I'll turn the call over to you for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure your mute function on your phone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause now for just a moment to allow everyone's signal. We can now take our first question from Jürgen Lande from Clarkson Plateau. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Just one question for me, actually, on the dividend. I mean, you have previously stated that the dividend is a priority. But if we assume a grimmer outlook for 2015 and 16, your cash will decline kind of rapidly. And how will you prioritize cash between dividends and strategic initiatives? Any color on this?
Yeah, I think clearly we've always stated our first priority with our cash is investing back into our business and in new projects. And as I stated earlier today, we see some very, we could see some interesting opportunities if the economics of those opportunities are sufficient quality. So we'll look, and our board's given management the priority to, first of all, look at investment in our data library as first priority for the cash. But then, of course, the board probably secondly is very keen on the dividend. And I think we've been quite careful in the past years to really take a number of scenarios into account when we set our dividend, leaving us enough room to invest in our business, but also maintain that dividend. And of course, we'll have to monitor the market going forward. But I think we're pretty comfortable right now where we are.
Okay. And the buyback program, should we expect that to be extended?
We completed the buyback that we had authorization to do from the share annual general meeting from 2014. That was completed, I guess, last month. And the board the board is requesting from the AGM in May authorization for share buybacks, but we have not announced anything at this point.
Okay. And lastly from me, both in terms of the amortization rate report for the quarter and also the margin in Australia or in Far East, you reported a 10% EBIT margin, but as I've understood, the margin on that project is kind of higher. Have you, first off, taken any forced impairments on the Asia-Pacific library in the quarter? And how should we think on amortization rate going forward 2015 and 16, assuming weaker sales?
Jürgen, I'll turn that answer over to Christian.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Jürgen. Hey. Well, I think for this particular project in Australia, we obviously don't provide any detailed information in terms of the profit margin or the amortization rate. But I think we have been very clear to the market that this is a quite unusual project in terms of the fact that a majority of our revenues will come from pre-funding and it will come at a very early stage of the project. We've also been very open about the fact that we amortize the whole book value during the acquisition and processing phase. So I guess you can assume that the amortization rate this quarter was extraordinarily high on that project, and also the fact that we had very high production on the project where we used two vessels most of the time or throughout Q1 means that probably as much as one-third of our investment came from one project, and obviously that has a significant effect on the amortization rate for the quarter. I think in terms of amortization rate going forward, let me first state that our goal is not to have the largest library of the industry in terms of book value, but rather the best performing library in terms of sales. And I think that was once again proven this quarter that we still had quite decent late sales from our multi-client library, even in a very challenging market. We adjusted the 2015 revenue guidance, as you know, on the 13th of April from $750 million to $630 million. Based on the challenging market we're experiencing. This adjustment did not automatically trigger any impairments, and in such case, we feel confident that the book value as of March 31st represents the real value of the library. Going forward, however, we will test the book value against our rolling future four-year sales forecast on a quarterly basis. And as we mentioned on the call today, in case of a prolonged down cycle, the risk of impairments will increase.
Okay.
So I think that the outlook for improvement in the market remains uncertain, it is difficult to provide more accurate guidance on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. We can now take our next question from John Olson from ABG. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Houston. A couple of questions. I know you don't provide a lot of details on the onshore business in the U.S., but it seems like oil companies are slashing budgets more in onshore in the U.S. than in the offshore business. Could you give some soft comments on sales late sales on, from the U.S. onshore business, please?
Well, I think, John, I think as we stated, you know, late sales in Q1 were down across the board, really in all regions. When I think about the behavior of our customers around the world, I can't point to onshore U.S. as a region that was abnormally negative or unusually negative relative to any other part of the world. I think oil companies are pretty cautious across the board in terms of their spending, both offshore as well as onshore and international versus U.S. I know what you're referring to. You know, clearly oil companies are pulling back from drilling. You know, they're laying a lot of rigs down in the U.S. We expect to see production impacted from that. But I can't really separate onshore from really any other region in Q1. It was a pretty difficult quarter for everywhere in Q1.
I see. Yeah. Another question. You have previously, I think it was a Cap Marks Day or Q4 presentation, you said how much of the investments that you're guiding on for 2015 that was already booked. Is that a number you could provide to us now, please?
I'm sorry, say that number again.
I think you said at the Capital Markets Day that at the time you had already committed roughly $317 million of the $420 million in investments. I wonder if you have a similar number now. How much of the $420 million in multi-client investment guidance is already committed or booked on vessels?
A bit more than what we had in January. Keep in mind that we've announced a couple of projects since January, since our January Capital Markets Day, and those are new commitments that we have. So we've added a bit from what we communicated in January.
Hmm. Is it possible to give a number? Is it closer to 400 or 350?
Pretty close to our guidance, John.
So that means you've already committed most of the 420?
That's probably correct, yeah.
Yeah.
And what kind of pre-funding levels? Could you give some indication of that as well? Should we expect this year? Because everything is already booked.
Yeah, John. You know, we're just not guiding on pre-funding. I think if you look at Q1 pre-funding, obviously the Australia project played a significant role in our pre-funding levels in Q1, and of course we're going to be completing that project in Q2. So. I think you can assume that probably later in the year pre-funding is going to drop off from where we were in Q1.
Mm. And you have also stated several times in the past that you are looking to potentially buy multi-client libraries from others. Could you give us an update on that, how the timing and the opportunities are out there, please?
Yeah, I mean, we're always looking at opportunities where, you know, we're expecting that in the market conditions we're in right now, there might be competitors that are interested in monetizing their libraries quicker. So we're always on the lookout for opportunities like that. I think you could, I think the guys that we have looking at M&A in our company are, it's pretty safe to say they're pretty much purely focused on looking at data libraries right now. Mm. And, I guess I would say that this could present some opportunities for us to acquire data libraries, but we're only going to do so if it really makes economic sense. So we're going to be cautious about it.
Okay. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. We can now take our next question from Christian Deason from Pareto Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, guys. A question on the pre-funding on new projects here. You obviously came into 2015 with a few projects in your backlog call it happier days. How are the new projects developing in terms of pre-funding and also sort of moving into the second half of the year and 2016 with regards to volume? You know, it's one thing is that you want to do the counter-cyclical investments. The other is sort of at what kind of pre-funding level are you willing to do that? So if you provide some color around that.
Yeah, you know, as you know, we're not guiding specifically on pre-funding this year. I think it's safe to say that it's harder to get pre-funding dollars in the market that we're in right now. And so that causes us to look at... look at potential opportunities, investment opportunities, quite carefully. I think if we're not shooting, I guess one way to talk about it, Christian, is we're not shooting to hit an investment number. We're shooting to maintain the quality of our library. And if we choose to do projects with lower pre-funding, then you should read into that we're pretty confident about the regions in which we're acquiring that data and the late sales possibilities for that. But it's a market in which it's tough to get pre-funding. I will point out that we have a number of projects that are really starting up right now, and will start in the summertime that do carry quite high pre-funding. You know, typically our onshore investments, as we've communicated in the past, we look for higher pre-funding for those just because of the economic model in the onshore U.S. and the difficulty in predicting late sales. We're going to be returning to Greenland this summer, and that's a multi-year project that we started last year. So we'll have two more years to go in East Greenland, and that's quite heavily pre-funded. While it's difficult to get pre-funding money, we've got, and as we've stated with John Eliason's question earlier, we've locked in quite a bit of our investment guidance, pretty close to our investment guidance already, and we're quite happy with the economic structure and the pre-funding levels of those projects.
Okay, and then on client behavior, you've mentioned in your commentary when you took down the guidance on clients not having finalized their spending plans for 2015. Do you have sort of a feel for when that process will conclude, and is it your impression that you can see some pent-up demand, so to speak, call it the second half when those budgets are finally set?
I think depends upon who you talk to within our customers, within the customer organizations. Clearly, when we talk to explorationists and exploration departments and even exploration managers in many cases, we're hearing that they need data, that they are they're moving forward with a number of their exploration projects which require multi-client data, and they're actively talking to us about what their data needs are. I think the situation is their visibility about the money they have to spend this year is quite poor. They're not hearing from their managements, and so there's a bit of a disconnect within our customer organizations, I think, where there's clearly some demand, but there is not a lot of visibility on when that money is going to be released, and I can't really give you any more visibility on that, to be honest with you, unfortunately.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Rahul Bhatt from J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. Just one quick question adding on to the client behavior. I just wanted to understand, are you changing the way that you're pricing your surveys, your multi-client, either late sales or pre-funding? The reason I ask this is just to understand how the conversations are between your customers and yourselves. Are they looking for discounts on data that they want, or is it that they don't want data at all right now?
Most of the discussions with the customers. Well, okay. First of all, let's kind of divide out late sales and pre-funding. I think pre-funding, there's tough negotiations for pre-funding dollars right now. I mean, it's a tough market. That said, our cost structure is significantly lower. The terms that we're getting from our vessel suppliers and our land crew suppliers are significantly lower than what we've seen in the past. And so we're able to pass some of that cost savings through to the customer when we enter into pre-funding discussions on new projects. So that gives us some flexibility from that standpoint. In terms of late sales, again, I think... right now, in terms of late sales, there's, as you saw from our numbers in Q1, late sales are substantially down from where they were last year at the same period. Those late sales that are occurring, sure, their negotiations take place, but those negotiations from a pricing standpoint usually focus around volumes of data. So if a customer is willing to commit to larger volumes of data, we're willing to discount. But we're able to, on smaller single project type purchases, we're able to maintain our pricing. Because, you know, the sort of one of the magical things about the multi-client business is if a customer needs data in a particular location and you have the only data set, you're able to maintain pricing to a certain extent.
Understood, Rob. And one other question is, on your prepared comments earlier on the webcast, you mentioned on the licensing rounds that you're looking forward to in 2015. Do you get the feeling by any chance that because so oil companies don't have the money to probably buy seismic data, then they do not probably have the money to, book or pay governments for licensing rounds itself? So do you think there'd be some delay in these licensing rounds and some of them could move on to 2016?
I think what's interesting is to see a number of countries that, even in the environment we're in right now, have recent license round announcements. Canada, East Coast Canada, for example, Newfoundland, Labrador, they're not delaying their license round process at all at this point. They've recently come out and announced the acreage that they're going to be including in this year's 2015 round. So there doesn't seem to be a holdback there. Of course, we have our regular rounds in the Gulf of Mexico, which the U.S. government holds those on a very regular schedule as part of their five-year plan. We're getting good signals from, in fact, Liberia held a round last fall, well after the oil price started collapsing. And they're in final negotiations with the round winners on signing blocks in Liberia. And even in Mexico, Mexico's moving forward with their rounds. They're in the middle of round one right now, offshore Mexico, for the first time where they're attracting international investment. So, it is encouraging to see a lot of these governments and countries moving forward with their rounds. I think they are mindful though of the climate that we're in. For example, I think there have been signals from several of those governments that they're mindful of the contractual terms that they're looking for in those. In those license rounds, we don't see evidence of a tremendous pullback from any of the host countries in which we're involved in. To be honest with you.
Understood. Thank you.
Thank you. We can now take our next question from Shola Labinjo from PPH. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. I had two questions. The first was around Mexico, and if you could talk about the level of pre-funding that you've been able to secure. For the Mexico project. I know you started looking at that some time ago. I was just curious to know if the pre-funding you secured then was committed and locked in, or if it was subject to when the permits were approved, and if the level of pre-funding on the project has moved over the course of that period. And then the second question was on the cost structure. You mentioned that you're seeing pretty favorable terms on the vessels and from your suppliers. I was just wondering if those costs have effectively stabilized, or if the cost of vessels and other supplies are still trending downwards.
Yeah, to address the first question on Mexico, we still see high customer interest in our planned program there. Of course, any pre-funding is going to be contingent upon permits, because we can't recognize the pre-funding dollars until we start the project. And oil companies want some assurance that before they make a commitment that you're going to you're actually going to be executing on the project. So, yes, typically in our commitments we make that our customers make to pre-fund a project, it is typically contingent upon pre-funding or upon permitting. I'm sorry. And we do expect those permits to be awarded within probably weeks. So we are optimistic that we're going to be able to commence acquisition in Mexico within the next couple of months at least. In terms of our cost structure, you know, we've seen a dramatic reduction in vessel day rates on, you know, both for vessels as well as really land crew contractual terms. We've been looking, a lot of the deals we've been signing both onshore and offshore are more turnkey deals, so we're not, in many cases, we're not in discussion with our suppliers on day rate terms. We're more in discussion with our suppliers on turnkey prices to complete an entire project. And obviously that's a good thing for TGS because we're able to pass off a lot of the risk off to the supplier versus taking on that risk ourselves. So, and when we calculate, you know, kind of calculate an equivalent day rate on that, we're seeing good day rates, you know, lower cost day rates than what we've seen in the past. We don't comment specifically on day rates, but I think it's safe to say we're probably seeing supplier contractual terms as good as we've seen since probably 2009.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We can now take our next question from Christopher Muller from SP1. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, hello. This is Christopher Muller-Luckin from SP1. In terms of the investment guidance for 2015, does that include Mexico multi-client investments?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So the project schedule overview, you know, when you say that it's more or less is committed the 420 view guided, that would also include Mexico, but would it also include projects which you have planned, committed capacity to, but do not show on that slide?
Yeah, I mean, when we commit capacity, when we go out and lock in capacity and have a permit to complete a project, we show it on the slide. So obviously we're not showing Mexico on there. We haven't received permits yet, and the plan on Mexico is to start with a single vessel and then ramp up throughout the year with multiple vessels.
Hmm. And as we stated previously, Christopher, we're pretty close to the 420 guidance. There's probably going to be a couple of announcements that is still yet to come, and that's probably going to make it up to 420.
Hmm. The tax rate in second quarter was quite low. Any specific reasons for that?
Well, it's purely based on exchange rate differences. As you know, the dollar strengthened significantly compared to the NOK in Q1, and you will see the effects on the net financials where we have an exchange loss. But the positive thing is that we also have a very low tax rate because we calculate the taxes in NOK and we translate that to the U.S. and it results in a very low tax rate.
Mm. And just finally, a bookkeeping question. The restructuring costs you'll book in second quarter, where will that be booked?
That will be booked under personnel costs and operational costs, and it will be probably highlighted as an extraordinary cost.
Okay, great.
And it's
Thank
going
you.
To be about $4 million in Q2.
Mm. Thank you.
Thank you. We can now take our next question from Morten Nystrom from Nordea. Please go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, Houston. A lot of the questions have been answered, but just to dwell some more on the dividends, I know you probably won't comment on the dividends for 2016, but, you know, Just to give an indication on how you're thinking here, let's say 2016 will be largely in line with 2015, both in terms of revenues and investments. Would you still, you know, keep your NOK 8.5, or would you reckon to be take a more cautious approach in how to distribute the dividends?
Well, you're right with your first statement. We're not going to comment on dividends for 2016. It's way too early on that, Morten. But I think it's safe to say it's the ambition of management and the board to at least maintain our dividend. We're going to run our business as we've done, and you know, look for good investment opportunities, but also, you know, a strong priority is maintaining that dividend and growing it where we can. So you know, it's too early to comment in 2016. Obviously, we got to see how the market's going to develop. We're going to have to see. Going to have to sit down with our board of directors closer to the end of 2015 and look at our plans and our budget, our strategic plan, and it will be set at that point, communicated in early 2016.
Good, thank you. Another question is that, you know, given the extreme weak vessel market, I guess you're largely able to pick up vessels here at the cash break-even level. Why aren't you now going out and locking in vessel capacity? Not necessarily, you know, a 24-month contract, but rather like 4 months for 16 and 17 in the North Sea or in the Gulf of Mexico. In, you know, in typical places where you know you're going to invest both in 2016 and 2017.
Well, you know, our business doesn't necessarily work that way, Morton. I mean, you know, projects that we're going to be executing in the North Sea or Barents Sea in 2016, 2017 are very immature at this point. And I think we're confident enough of vessel availability and supply that we'd like to go ahead and continue playing the spot market. We've been more or less playing the spot market since 2010, 2009, so we haven't had to lock any long-term capacity in. You know, obviously, you know, even if we locked in capacity in the future, it's only going to be for single projects because we don't want to pay for things like transit time between projects and items like that. But it's difficult, you know, at this point it's very difficult for us to have a lot of visibility on specifically which projects we're going to sanction for 2016, and therefore it's probably not likely we would commit to vessels at that point.
Okay, last question. Could you just give us the figure on the book value of your onshore library? Or percentage, how much, you know, approximately it is on the total value?
No, we can't give that guidance. I'm sorry. It's part of our NSA group in terms of how we report our investments and numbers.
Yeah, but I'm talking the book value and the balance sheet.
Yeah, we don't give guidance on that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We can now take our next question from Daniel Rizik from Handelsbanken. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Follow up on Mexico. Would you care to quantify how much out of the 420 that is Mexico for 2015?
No, I wouldn't care to quantify that. You know, it's a 2D project. I'll just describe the project to you a little bit. It's a 2D project. We hope to have our first vessel in the water shooting, you know, in the first half of this year. So sometime this quarter is our hope. Early on we locked in vessel capacity for the project, and our intention is to use up to four 2D vessels in Mexico, and we hope, you know, that before the end of 2015 we'll have all four vessels working in Mexico. So the intent is to ramp it up gradually through 2015. The program that we have there is very regional in scale. It's been structured. It's been put together with the feedback of our customers who are pre-funding us and who are pre-committed to the project, and it's going to provide a really an unprecedented coverage of offshore Mexico in terms of 2D coverage. We're quite excited about it. You know, I think if you wanted to try to quantify our level of investment in Mexico, you know, you can assume 2D acquisition, you know, with a gradual ramp up from one vessel to maybe up to four vessels before the end of the year.
And if I did that, any sort of guesstimates on how many vessel days that would be? Do you have that figure?
No, I don't.
No. Okay. Could you comment a little bit on how it looks if everything goes according to plan, 2016 versus 2015, then in terms of activity in Mexico?
The project that we have in Mexico will go into well into 2016. So the program that we have there is quite extensive. I'm looking to Christian now, maybe to comment on.
You should probably expect more in 16 than in 15, given that we're not started yet in 15, and we're probably not going to start within a couple of weeks. So it's probably going to be more in 16, but I don't want to give you an exact figure on that.
No, but it's substantially higher in 16 versus 15, given that you're not starting until.
Yeah, we're certainly not going to do half of our We're certainly not going to do half of our program in 2015. That's for sure.
Yeah, great. And then just sort of theoretically, so to say, is it fair to say that you would require a higher pre-funding of the Mexico service, given that the outlook for late sales is more perhaps uncertain than the rest of the portfolio?
Not necessarily. Our experience on 2D program, broad regional 2D programs like this, particularly in a basin as attractive as Mexico, where the government has shown every intention. In fact, they've already executed on license rounds. I think we're quite enthusiastic about the late sales potential of that project.
Okay, thanks a lot.
As a further reminder, please press star 1 to ask a question. We can now take our next question from Frank Nagu from Deutsche Bank.
Morning, gents. Most questions have been answered, but just quickly to get a sense on the working capital structure, you've reported quite a solid CFO from this quarter, given the good receivable collection. Could you just give us a bit of color on how you see this evolving in this quarter and the next? Thank you.
I'm sorry, your question is related to cash flow development?
Yes, cash flow development.
Okay, I'll turn it over to Christian to answer that.
Yeah, so we had a very good cash flow this quarter, as you recognize, and we increased our cash balance by more than $100 million. That was pretty much what we expected this quarter, because we had a very strong sale in December 2014. So a lot of the cash flow this quarter is coming from our strong end of 2014. I think for the future, I would refer you to our guidance. Typically, cash flow is closely related to late sales, and I think that kind of sets the expectation for the rest of the year.
Okay. So, and in terms of receivable collections and maybe payables, do you have kind of a sense of?
We managed to reduce our working capital significantly in Q1. I wouldn't expect the same reduction for the next couple of quarters. I would expect that to follow sales pretty much.
Okay. Very clear. Thanks.
We have no further questions in the queue now. I would like to turn the call back over to you, Mr. Hobbs.
Thanks, Breed. Before we close, I'd like to thank all of you for participating in today's call. As we've discussed today, demand for seismic data has significantly deteriorated over the first quarter of 2015, and the outlook for improvement remains quite uncertain in our market. I think, however, that it's worthwhile to summarize how TGS plans to manage in this down cycle to close out the call. First, we need to watch our cost level very carefully. Management has taken concrete actions to recognize additional operational cost savings from our original plan in 2015, and we will continue to review the company's cost structure, and if necessary, we'll take additional action to reduce costs if the market continues to deteriorate. Secondly, our asset-light business model allows us to quickly adjust plans, and we have no long-term commitments, as we've stated in this call earlier. While we want to continue to invest countercyclically and take advantage of favorable vessel rates and land crew rates, these opportunities will only be pursued if the economics can be justified. And finally, we'd like to highlight that the markets like this always bring up a lot of opportunities. With a combination of no interest-bearing debt and a solid cash balance of $352 million, TGS is uniquely positioned to capitalize on some of these. You should therefore expect that we are being active looking for inorganic opportunities arising from the down cycle. However, these also will only be pursued if the economics can be justified. That concludes our call for today, and we're looking forward to talk to you again at our Q2 earnings release on July 30th. Thank you very much.
will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.